This is the Marketing Podcast Network. You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to Uncorking a Story, the podcast that introduces you to the rich world of storytellers who share their personal journeys, creative processes, and the stories behind their stories, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Mike Carlin, and I'm thrilled to be part of your writing journey. If you're an aspiring writer, a literary enthusiast, or simply someone who believes in the transformative power of words, you've come to the right place. Every week, we'll pop the cork on the world of successful storytellers and give you a healthy pour of inspiration, insight, and empowerment. My mission is to help writers like you realize your full potential through the transformative and therapeutic power of writing. Whether you're just starting your literary voyage or looking to refine your craft, I'm here to provide you with the knowledge, inspiration, and encouragement you need to embark on your own storytelling adventure. So, are you ready to uncork your story and let your creativity flow? Uncorking a Story is about to begin. Sit back, relax, and let the transformative magic of storytelling whisk you away. Welcome to Uncorking a Story. Julie Balco is an author who loves writing novels with complicated women characters. She joins me today on Uncorking a Story to talk about her second novel, The Me List, which is full of snark and heart as it brings to life an unlikely friendship between neighbors. Welcome to Uncorking a Story, Julie.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, Julie, I'm very excited to have you here. I love snark. It is, as my wife will tell you, one of my favorite food groups. But tell me, before we jump into the snarkiness of your latest, where does your story as an author begin?
I guess my story begins at birth. I was kind of born holding a pencil, is what my mother would say, which is not true. That would be a very traumatic birth. But I cannot remember an age where I wasn't writing and thinking about stories. So loved English. Even my early English teachers told me I was a great writer. Went on to college and studied English and advertising because I was worried about living in my parents' basement forever if it was just English. And while I love my clients and I love advertising, it's not the same as having, you know, your name on a book. So kept kind of pushing myself to write a book. And it wasn't until actually my mother passed away that I was inspired to write a story because I love reading and I felt like no book had set me up for grief. And I thought, I wonder if I could write a fiction book that uses grief as kind of a creative theme. And so anyone going through it wouldn't be alone. And that's how my first book was actually born.
Oh, very interesting. I'm actually doing something similar right now. I lost my brother this past summer. And that's inspired me to kind of take on grief in a way that also has a fair amount of comedy in it. And I know that like the two, you know, you think grief and comedy, they make for strange bedfellows, but what I found anyway is that, you know, comedy really helps. You know, if you write something that just focused like 100% on grief, it's a little bit harder to get through. How did you tackle writing about grief after your mother's passing?
For one, I waited a little while, and that definitely helped. The story really just started flowing, and then I tried to be just really honest about it because what I felt like is really lonely in my grief. And I feel like a lot of people don't talk about it, which is silly because so many of us, right? Like I mentioned that and you tell me about your brother. So many of us carry grief with us every day and we don't talk about it at all. But I thought I'm just going to hit it head on because that's kind of who I am. Unfortunately, what happened was after my book got picked up by a publisher, as I was editing it, my father passed away. So I was actually editing this book while going through grief, which I had never, you know, intended. But I think it made for a really authentic story. And I've heard from so many readers that have read it and just felt like, you know, my joke is that it's cheaper than therapy, but that the book really helped them kind of come to terms with some of their emotions and what they had been carrying.
I mean, I can't imagine losing your father. you know, as you're writing this, you know, story that not about your mother, but certainly inspired in part by her. That's sort of a lot to deal with in a sort of a kind of condensed period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I always kept my last name because my dad was always a big champion of my writing. So I like to think that he's on every book with me.
Oh, that's very sweet. Before we get into the me list, I have to ask about your career in advertising, because I started my career in advertising many, many, many years ago. Where did your career in advertising take you?
I've been on the client side, I've been on the agency side, and now I'm on my side as a freelance writer. And I like that a lot better. I love working with clients. You know, it's kind of similar to books. I can always kind of figure out that simple messaging that will kind of resonate with people. And I don't know, I have a lot of fun and I like meeting new people. So now as a freelance writer, a lot more flexible to kind of work on books on the side, but love the challenge of a big writing problem.
Yeah. I remember when, in the creative department, writers were called copywriters. And now I don't think they call writers copywriters, like content strategists, I think, are the term that I hear now more often than others. But,
you know, when I tell people I'm a copywriter, they don't understand what that means. So I just like, I'm a writer in advertising.
Well, very cool. What can you share with us about the me list?
So the Me List is a very different book than The Things We Keep. The Things We Keep will probably make you cry. The Me List will make you laugh, but also I'm hearing from readers, it does make them cry too, which I didn't really intend, but I write from the heart, so it happens. But the Me List is about two women who actually hate each other and their neighbors, Patricia, who's perfect, and Olivia, who's basically a perfect disaster. And they are not friends at all until one day Patricia hires Olivia as her assistant and challenges her to write a me list, 10 things that will change her life. And the list changes both of them. So it was definitely my way to go at, the world is a little judgy these days. So it was going at judgment, it was going at self-growth and friendship and having some fun along the way.
But just the premise of these two people who hate each other. And now they're working together, which to me is very intriguing. What else? Is there anything else you can share with us about their relationship kind of before kind of joining forces and coming together?
Yeah. So I figured a book about judgment, I would write it in the most judgy, snarky way possible. And I had a lot of fun with their relationship, what they both thought about each other. And then of course, what wound up not being true at all, because as you get to know somebody, all these things you were judging about, turns out they had a lot more in common than they realized.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, that old sort of cliched line that you hear in so many movies, you know, you and I are not so much unalike. And it sounds like that's the case here.
Definitely.
Why are we so judgmental? Like, why are we as a people so judgmental? Because you're right. I mean, we come across, you know, other people and we make these snap judgments about them and we don't take the time to get to know somebody, you might be missing out on something, but.
Yeah. And, you know, as a woman, I find that we can be a pretty judgy bunch. And the whole key to my book was, what happens if we didn't judge each other and we're empowering each other instead? And that's what happens with the story. The two women kind of go through this change and they start empowering each other. And it's pretty awesome what can happen.
Yeah. Where'd you come up with this idea of having a me list? And can you describe what a me list is?
Sure. So a me list, it could be small things, it can be big things, anything that you think would challenge you or bring you joy or help you grow as a person. And the idea for the me list came from this idea that I have a list for everything. You know, I'm a freelance writer, I'm an author, I'm a mom, I've got a lot going on. So I've got a list for the weekend, for my kids, for school. You know, the one person I don't have a list for is me. I don't have a list that like looks at my life and is like, what do you need, Julie? You know, how can you grow as a person? And that gave me the idea for the book. I think a lot of women are like me. We take on a lot and we don't look at ourselves.
Yeah, it's almost like a sort of a New Year's resolution, but for any time of the year, right? So you don't have to, why wait to the new year to put together your me list?
Yeah, and what's really cool is at the back of the book, I actually have a spot where the reader can make their own me list. And I've heard from so many people that are starting to do new things. I get pictures of people's me list, and that's pretty awesome.
So how has your life personally changed having gone from sort of, you know, working for other people to working for yourself, as well as, you know, doing, you know, freelance writing and, you know, writing books? Like, what has changed within your life?
I think as a writer, you know, the creative freedom is very different when you start writing for yourself and start believing in yourself and allowing yourself to kind of dictate what work you take on. So that's been very freeing. When I write books, I make sure I don't put myself under deadline because I'm under deadline every day for my clients. So I'm trying to keep books. They're the fun part. They're the thing I do for me. So I definitely protect kind of my headspace around my books. That's very different. But I don't know. The good news is I love to write. Someone asked me recently about writer's block, and I've never had that. I just tend to write. So I hope that continues for a really long time.
Well, that's wonderful that you've never, I don't say suffered from it, but experienced it, because I know so many people have, and I know that there's all sorts of tips and tricks out there to sort of prevent it. But you know what I'm really curious about is your journey to, you know, that first publication. So can you talk a little bit about sort of, you know, how that came together for you? Because, you know, a lot of the people who listen to the show are aspiring authors themselves. So, you know, along the way, if you could offer any words of advice to people who want to be sort of the next Julie Balco, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to start drinking. No, I'm just kidding. I would tell them it's really hard, but it's worth it. But the first book, I'm really type A, and I read this article about like other ways to find publishers. And at that point, Twitter was kind of getting big. Now it's no longer Twitter. And they're having pitch contests. And I thought, I'm home, I'm writing, I could join Twitter. Like, how hard is that, right? So I had this idea of join Twitter, start just kind of tweeting about my life. And by the time the pitch contest would come, you know, maybe I could pitch my book. And so that's exactly what happened. And, you know, obviously I do a lot of social media for clients. So it wasn't that hard to gain a following on Twitter. Plus I'm just weird. So I think people like that. So by the time the pitch contest came, I had a lot of followers and I was able to pitch. And that's where I met my publisher for The Things We Keep, was actually on a pitch contest on Twitter. So totally random. But I had been querying, and, you know, I had discovered how just hard that is. And you really have to just keep trying. And through querying, I learned that people liked my writing style, but were looking for a commercial book. And that's how my second book, The Me List, really was born, was through hearing feedback, not giving up, but actually just using that to kind of write another book. And that's probably my biggest advice to everybody is you're going to get a lot of criticism, but if you kind of tweak that and think of it as feedback, it kind of can help you write, you know, down the right path. And I wouldn't have written The Me List had not a few agents said, you really should try a commercial book.
Yeah. It's so important to listen to that feedback and criticism. And, you know, it's actually a gift if you get something that can help you. I mean, oftentimes, you know, just having gone through the querying process a number of times, you know, you get very, very general thanks, but no thanks type letters back. Yeah. But if somebody takes the time to, you know, give you a little bit of advice, it really is worth listening to and considering for future projects.
Yeah. If you can, you know, keep your head up through the querying process, you're halfway there.
That's right. Well, you know, I'm curious, what keeps you going as a writer? How do you find motivation? How do you, you know, continually keep wind in your sails to kind of keep at it?
Well, definitely the author thing. I think it's a little bit addicting. You know, I wrote the first book not ever thinking I would write another book, but then that just kind of happened. And then I was writing the second book. I had this other idea where I was like, ooh, hold on, author, that's to explore somewhere else. So that kind of inspired my next book, which I'm working on now. And I guess I just, you know, creativity comes from just being excited about your own work and not losing faith that it will find a path. It will find a publishing place. With my second book, I will tell you, I queried and I talked to a lot of agents and I got so close. And at a certain point, I didn't have an agent. And I thought, am I writing this for an agent or am I writing this because I love writing and I want to reach readers? And then I started going directly to small presses that didn't need agents. And that's when my next book was created, The Me List. So it was unagented.
Yeah. So that is just, you know, showing how the publishing market has changed so much over the years. And really, you know, those smaller presses, those smaller hybrid or independent publishers are, I think they're a real threat to the publishing industry. And there are some lessons there for, you know, the big publishers to sort of keep their eyes out, because there are a lot of challengers out there. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I feel like, you know, they publish a lot of really great stuff. Like, you know, the big publishing house can only take so much. Like, a lot of the more interesting, more diverse, more different topics are happening in the smaller presses. So I find it a wonderful creative outlook. Like, I don't think, oh, it's not, you know, a top five book, so it's not, I'm not an author. Nope, not at all. I'd say, you know, small presses value you as an author, and a lot of them will really kind of be your partner in crime. And that's pretty great.
Yeah, and it's willing to take a risk on somebody who doesn't have the massive platform that some of the, you know, the bigger publishers are looking for. And if you're a newer author, you don't have the 100,000 person mailing list, or, you know, six figures of followers on any of the social media platforms. You're building that. So the smaller places are definitely more willing to take a chance. What are some of the big lessons you've learned between your first book and second book that you're going to wind up taking to a third, in terms of whether it is how you write, when you write, what you write about? What are some big lessons learned?
Well, with my first book, I really did most of the marketing myself and most of the reaching out myself. And it's pretty exhausting. So I learned that I need help. And so with the second book, I actually did have marketing help with my publisher. And I also hired a publicist. Get Red is my publicist for the Me List. And that's been huge, because while I have a nice social media following, to reach beyond that really takes some team, some partners. And so I wasn't afraid to do that, especially hearing all the positive feedback from agents on the Me List. I knew the book had, you know, pretty good appeal, so it wasn't going to like suck. So I used some of my own money to kind of support on the publicity side. And I had learned that from not being afraid and basically asking other authors who I noticed, you know, I was like, ooh, I see your book everywhere. What's your secret? And they would tell me, and I'd write down their publicist's name. And that's how I kind of interviewed my publicist for the Me List. So my big experience is, don't be afraid to reach out to other authors. I always joke, like, bookshelves are big. We can all win. We all want to help each other out and learn from people. And something works for them, it might work for you.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very supportive community. It never ceases to amaze me. Authors just willing to give of their time to sort of mentor or sort of bring along new talent, or even, you know, people they might consider, you know, competitors. We're all sort of fellow writers. But the lesson of not doing it all yourself, I think, is a very important one, because I like to think about being, you know, an author, particularly if you publish independently, as a small business owner, and, you know, where you are, you know, you're creating pretty much everything. You know, you're building the product, which is the manuscript. Once it hits the shelves, you've got to advertise it. And if you're not bringing other people in on that journey, you know, you might hit a wall. I mean, you might just burn out. it's because it is so much. It is so much to handle.
I think authors are, you know, do so much of their own marketing, so much of the social media. Writing the book is the easiest part. And that's the part that was shocking. And I wish someone had told me. Because, you know, writing a book isn't that easy. And that definitely is the easiest part of the author journey.
Well, you know, had you known that beforehand, it may have dissuaded you from completing that book. You never know.
It's true. It's probably good I didn't know.
Well, I'm curious. I always like to get to know my guests a little bit more by asking a couple of pop culture questions. So, Julie, I'm wondering, when you were growing up, what were some of your favorite things to watch on TV, if anything?
Well, that is a good question. Now, I was always reading books, as you could imagine. I'm trying to think what we watched TV as a family. So I think we watched The Wonder Years was a big one that we all, you know, me and my dad would watch. He was a big TV person more than my mom. I don't know. I watched some Saturday morning cartoons. That wasn't that exciting.
Now, I remember The Wonder Years that started with a Joe Cocker song, or his version of that song anyway. It was, I think the Beatles wrote that one. It was, what would you do if I sang it? I won't sing it.
I tried to help my friends, and they weren't into it as much as I was. So sad.
You know, I think it is one of those shows that has a certain place in time. And I think that place in time has come and gone. But what about music? What did you like listening to growing up?
I was also pretty weird when it came to music. That's why I'm a writer. I actually listened to a lot of classical music. I don't know why. That's just what I was into. I played the violin as a young age. And I guess I read a lot, so I'd like to listen to music that didn't have words. So Pachelbel's Canon was my favorite song growing up. And now I feel like a big loser because my daughter, who's my age, loves like everybody, Paramore, Taylor Swift. So she's really my musical education late in life. I also listened to a lot of musicals early on, which isn't surprising because it's good storytelling. But yeah, I think that paints a pretty dorky picture of my teenage years.
Well, I mean, look, Canon in D is objectively has one of the most beautiful melodies that's ever been written.
I've been friends.
How can you fault anyone for saying that? We talked about writer's block before, but you know, how do you feel when you're staring at a blank page? Feel any one way or the other? Is it excitement? Is it fear? How would you characterize your emotions?
I don't stare very long. I just tend to start writing. I'm pretty unconscious when it comes to writing, so I can just start going. Even with like a client assignment, you know, I'll read and then I'll write. It's easier to edit for me than to stare at a page.
Yeah, I'm curious now that you know you've got two books published under your belt, and I know a third is on the way. You know, are you using those or is it part of your, you know, your marketing plan to use those as calling cards for client work, for freelance client work, or do you keep those two worlds separate?
I keep them pretty separate. I'm always very aware that it sometimes makes my freelance clients nervous that I'm an author. Like, oh no, are you going to stop helping us? So I'm always very careful. Like, I have a new book coming out, but don't worry, I'm still available for freelance. So they are very, very separate worlds. In fact, like once in a while, I might put something on LinkedIn about my author world and it feels like, you know, two worlds colliding. No, advertising people don't care about books. I mean, they just want you to do their assignment. But yeah, it probably has some street cred, right?
Yeah, why not? And, you know, lastly, as we wrap up here, if you could go back in time and whisper any words of advice to a younger Julie's, in a younger Julie's ears, what would you tell your younger self?
I would tell her to believe in herself sooner and write the book sooner. Don't wait for a traumatic event to publish your first book. Because the sad part is, you know, my parents never got to see my name on a book. And not that I'm writing for my parents, but who doesn't want that? You know, I'm very aware I don't have a big support system. And it'd be pretty cool to kind of share that with them because they knew I was a writer from an early age.
Yeah, a little parental validation is not necessarily a bad thing, right?
Plus they're good PR, you know, they would have sold it.
That's right. Well, Julie, tell us, where can people pick up the Me List if they're so inclined to do so?
Sure. The Me List is online everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Target. It's free on Kindle Unlimited. So pick it up and read it. Leave there a review. All those good things.
Always a good thing. And then if people want to connect with you, do you have a website or any social media handles you can share with the audience?
Sure. I have my own website, Julie, J-U-L-E-E, Valgo.com. Another gift from my parents. Everyone spells my name wrong. I am everywhere on social media, which is a blessing and a curse. So follow me anywhere. I'm there.
All right. Well, Julie, thank you so much for stopping by and uncorking a story, letting me uncork yours.
Thanks for having me here.
Thanks for listening to Uncorking a Story. If you'd like more information about today's guest or to find out more about Mike, go to uncorkingastory.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in every week to hear Mike Carlin uncork a new story.